T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
All along I've said this would be a tough fight against the coronavirus. And it's important we understand more and more we are fighting this war on two fronts. First, in our hospitals to save lives. But the second front now is more and more an economic one as well, where folks are struggling to make ends meet, running out of money. New Yorkers who don't have enough money to pay the rent, to get the medicines they need, to get the food they need. So we're going to talk today about our efforts to get food to New Yorkers who need it. Because this is a growing problem. This is a problem that's going to more and more affect the people of our city as they run out of money. And even though there is some federal help coming, it's not that much and it's going to take too long for many people. So just as we deal with the most important moment in the fight against the illness in our hospitals to save lives, there's a new front opening up. And we have to be there for people who need food. We cannot have any New Yorker go hungry. Since we're talking about two fronts, I want to open on the first one. And I'm going to say to all of you, it is way too early to draw any definite conclusions. I want to really make sure none of us in public life tell you we have turned a corner until we are absolutely certain. We are not there yet. And I want to make sure no one stops practicing social distancing and shelter in place. We must continue those strategies if we're going to protect lives. But I can say in the last couple of days, something is starting to change. We don't know if it will be sustained, but it is meaningful now. We projected to you even on Sunday that we had seen a little bit of progress in terms of when we were going to need ventilators. We've seen more progress now. So that means the number of people showing up in our hospitals who need a ventilator, that situation has improved a bit in recent days. I'm hopeful, but I'm not drawing conclusions until I'm 100% sure and my health team is 100% sure. But the good news is it is giving us some more time. It is giving us the opportunity to get more ventilators in and know we can get farther into the week. So that's very good news. Just the fact that we know we've bought a few more days and we can absolutely protect lives because ventilators will be there, that's crucial news. We'll have to see in the days ahead if it's something sustained and something that deepens, and we'll give you daily updates to tell you what's going on. But I want to at least note a little improvement in the last few days, and thank God for that. But as I said, when it comes to the economic battle, when it comes to battling to make sure that people have the food they need, that situation is not getting better, it's getting worse. And think about why, because all those people lost jobs. All those people still work, but not as much. All those people are not getting a paycheck or getting reduced paycheck. The number is staggering. The initial projection is at least 500,000 New Yorkers are either already out of work or soon will be. That is the kind of level of unemployment and economic distress, the only comparison you can make for that is the Great Depression, which scares me to death to even say that. And it's right where we are here. Here in Manhattan, I am reminded of what this city went through. In the Great Depression, I'm reminded of it because of the stories I heard from my family, my older relatives who went through the Depression, right here in this part of New York City. And the stories they told about how difficult it was, how painful it was, how disorienting it was. We have to understand that what we're going through now, what we will go through, that's the only parallel we can look at. And we cannot underestimate the problem for everyday New Yorkers, especially when it comes to food. We're having a lot of people literally having to ask that question, where is my next meal coming from? More and more people are in that situation. So we have to act very aggressively to address that. Now, I want to be clear. I've given you the extent of the problem, but I want to be clear what the mission statement is. I want to be clear what our resolve is. We will not let any New Yorker go hungry. Literally, we will not let any New Yorker go hungry. We have been planning from the beginning of this crisis to address the hunger problem. And because we understood that this would be a profound part of what we faced, and this is something that we had seen in other crises as well, but this is a whole different scale. But we knew this was something we had to prepare for. I named a few weeks ago an extraordinary public servant, Commissioner Catherine Garcia, as our food czar, with the responsibility to come up with a system that we've never had to have in decades in this city, but a system to feed people on a mass scale if it came to that. She has been working closely with the Department of Education, Department for the Aging, and Emergency Management to immediately put into action a food plan, but also build for anything bigger we may need to do. The Chancellor and I had opportunity, very special opportunity, to spend some time with the food service workers here at PS1. They've served 3,100 meals in the past week to people who need it. They're good people. I said in there, they're another kind of first responder. They've showed up to help people in need, and they've been a lifeline for people in this community. So 3,100 meals in the past week for children and families right here in the Lower East Side. This is a part of something much bigger. And I want to thank, of course, everyone at PS1, all the teachers and staff, everyone who's been part of this effort here, the food service workers, the principal, Amy Hamm, everyone who has done this work, and this whole team that has come together focused on food, Chancellor Carranza, again, from Department for the Aging, our Commissioner Lorraine Cortez Vasquez, of course, our Health Commissioner, Dr. Oxiris Barbeau, all of them, our Emergency Management Commissioner, Deanne Criswell, working under the leadership of Catherine Garcia, who's been helping to coordinate all the agencies in common cause. And as always, our elected officials are helping us spread the word, helping us find people who need help, helping us to make sure we have the resources we need. Thank you to State Senator Brian Kavanaugh, who's with us now, for everything he's done. So I want to give you a sense of the scale of this effort, and this is just the beginning. In the last 3 weeks, the efforts of Department of Education, Department for the Aging, Emergency Management, all coordinated by Commissioner Garcia, those efforts have provided 2.6 million meals to New Yorkers who needed food. 2.6 million meals in the last 3 weeks, and that is just the beginning. Now, everybody, the site you see here, there are 434 other sites around the city just like this, where anyone can come, get breakfast, lunch, dinner, all three if they need it, for as many members of their family as they need. So We're asking for students or students with their parents to come earlier in the day, 7:30 to 11:30. We're asking adults who are alone to come later in the day, 11:30 to 1:30. But it's the same exact standard everywhere. No one is turned away. No one has to pay anything. You get as many meals as you need. This is about making sure people have food. Now, there's a different initiative for those, for the senior citizens who need help, for folks who are homebound, for folks who are vulnerable, and that the only solution for them is a delivery. There's also a growing delivery system. This is something Lorraine Cortez Vasquez has been working on from the beginning, and it's building all the time. So anybody who truly needs a home delivery can call 311, and we'll get them that delivery, or they can go to nyc.gov/getfood to sign up. There's a lot of different things that we can get for people. We've got these grab-and-go sites at the schools. There are a lot of food pantries, the home delivery. We can make sure people who do not get food stamps sign up if they're eligible. Lots of different things we can do to help people. So again, anyone who needs help can go to 311, can go to nyc.gov/getfood, or text the word food, or in Spanish, they can text the word comida to 877-877 to find the site nearest them. So if anyone needs it, you can use that text, again, the word food or the word comida, to 877-877 and find out a site near you where you can get the food you need for yourself and your family. Now, that's about helping all New Yorkers, anyone in need. But I also want to mention something very particular about our heroes, our healthcare workers who are at the front lines dealing with this crisis. It's been a very, very difficult month for them. The month of March into April has been very, very tough. These folks are working so hard under such adverse circumstances, they often don't even have time to go outside for even a few minutes. They don't have time to go to the deli like they used to in the hospital or the cafeteria. They need help in every way they can get it, and we want food to get to them. So many people are responding in communities all over New York City and getting food to hospitals, helping our healthcare workers directly. But I want to mention some very special efforts. Really appreciate these efforts. For example, Lavazza Coffee, that company is helping hospital staff. They're donating 60,000 bags of coffee for doctors and nurses and hospital workers. And we all know how important it is to have coffee in the middle of this fight, so thank them deeply for that. On a very big level, amazing announcement today. This is something I'm announcing that's brand new. I want to thank Deborah and Leon Black, two New Yorkers who are showing extraordinary generosity. They have teamed up with the Mayor's Fund. They have donated $10 million to help get food and crucial household supplies for the families of the healthcare workers. So this initiative is called Healthcare Heroes, and Deborah and Leon Black have put their $10 million forward. They are looking for matching donations from others who can help. If more comes in, they're ready to provide another $10 million to match up to $10 million in donations from other donors. So an incredible, incredible effort. I want to thank both of them on behalf of all 8.6 million New Yorkers. They teamed up with the Mayor's Fund, and in turn, they have partnered, everyone's partnered with the company Aramark that does food services. They will be putting together at least 300,000 packages of food and household supplies for doctors, nurses, hospital workers of all kind, to ease their burden and to help their families. The Red Cross will be doing a lot of the deliveries for the healthcare heroes. The Robin Hood Foundation will be managing the matching funds to make sure that as other donations come in, we activate that match. This entire initiative will be beginning to deliver these crucial supplies and the food to the families of the healthcare workers, hopefully no later than Monday, maybe even sooner. So that's an amazing effort. We also have an effort by New York Roadrunners. They're a wonderful New York organization. Last week, they have 20,000 pairs of gloves to help our healthcare workers. Now they're donating 10,000 meals for doctors and nurses and frontline staff. So we see so many different efforts coming together. Everyday New Yorkers standing up, people doing everything they can to help our heroes. Now, one more point I want to make before some quick summary in Spanish. I talked to you over the weekend. It was very moving to me that the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, volunteered ventilators from Oregon to help New York. See another great act by a governor, Governor Gavin Newsom of California, who has taken 500 ventilators that they were using in California, had a very tough time, we know it, in many parts of that state. They're taking 500 ventilators, returning them to the national stockpile so they can go to places like New York and the other places that are hard hit. So I want to thank Governor Newsom. There is something happening all over this country where people are pouring out their hearts to New York. They're standing with us. People all over the world are standing with us. And I think New Yorkers are feeling it more and more. We're in a deep, deep fight. But New Yorkers know we can win this fight. We see more and more people helping us, and our own toughness as New Yorkers, our own resiliency is coming through more and more. But look at all the ways that people are lifting each other up. It's absolutely amazing. So we're in a fight, but we will not lose this fight. We will prevail. And I have great faith that with all the help we're getting, we're going to see this through together. A few words in Spanish. Estamos luchando contra este virus en dos frentes. Muchos están perdiendo sus trabajos y fuentes de ingreso. Si a usted le hace falta comida, la ciudad de Nueva York está aquí para usted. No vamos a dejar que ningún neoyorquino pase hambre, especialmente los más vulnerables. With that, and again, with great gratitude to everyone who's helping us and all my colleagues here for the amazing work they're doing, I want to take questions from our colleagues in the media. Yes. Just speak up a little more. I'm sorry.
Supplies are scarce for fire EMS. I know we're talking a lot about hospitals getting the resources, but what about for EMS? What about for paramedics?
Yeah, I spoke to Commissioner Nigro yesterday. He affirmed every time he has said they need additional N95 masks or any PPEs, they're getting them instantly. It's a priority to support our first responders. Everyone is working on a crisis standard, so I keep saying this is so important. There's an ideal standard we'd all like to be at. We're not there now because we're in a crisis because of the shortages all over the country. So the standard, the crisis standard held by the CDC is what we're matching consistently, and fire department, EMS have those N95 masks to meet that standard. Anything more they need, they will get, period. Period. Dan Nigro calls and says, I need something more. It will be immediately provided from everything that we have. So we want to make sure that happens. Testing has been prioritized for first responders, and we're continually trying to add to the amount of testing. We all know that's been an uphill battle from the beginning, but as we get more testing capacity, first responders, healthcare workers are a priority. So I think literally with every day, particularly if we get a little bit of relief here in the progression of disease, we'll be able to get more and more supplies in and be able to help more and more people. But there's no question in the world, they are priority.
Commissioner Nigro asked for supply yesterday.
Commissioner Nigro said he had the N95s that he needed. I said, whenever you need a resupply, you'll get it immediately, period. Yes. You can take it down safely. For this, you're well distanced.
You mentioned at the beginning seeing something starting to change in the hospital. I'm hoping
I spoke to Dr. Mitch Katz, and obviously health and hospitals have been the hardest hit. Elmhurst has rightfully been focused on as this kind of the epicenter of the epicenter. But we know that Lincoln Hospital in the Bronx, Bellevue, Queens Hospital, many others have borne the brunt. For the first time in many days, we did not see a major increase in the number of ventilators needed in those hospitals yesterday. Very striking. When you go back about 2 weeks, every day there was a substantial increase. Some days more, some days less, but every day there was a substantial increase. We needed more ventilators than the day before, every single day. For the first time yesterday, they were pretty much breaking even. That's not the end of the discussion, Aaron. We have to watch out. This is a disease that, you know, if you take your eye off the ball, there's nothing that stops it from reasserting. So we have to be careful. And no one should let down their guard. No one should stop taking the precautions. But just on the sheer numbers, some improvement was evident yesterday. Again, that's buying us some time to get more ventilators in and get ahead of things. That's encouraging. But we got to see it happen for a number of days before we can declare it a bigger trend. The number intubated, I believe he said they were around 830 across their system. So they're about 20% of the healthcare capacity of New York City is health and hospitals in terms of hospital beds. They had about 830 people intubated. So that number was pretty stable from Sunday into Monday.
That's the total number.
Correct.
Okay. On the state level, they see, you know, the deaths have also started to kind of level off. Are you seeing that?
We are tracking the state information is what we are using. And so we agree with the state on that, but also, and I think the state's in the same place, we want to report something good, just like we have had to report the tough stuff, but it's too early to call it a pattern or trend. Because we don't want a situation where, you know, you could see something change rapidly the other way. And we don't want to give people the wrong sense of things. Also, really crucial, this is testament to the fact that social distancing, shelter in place, clearly is having an impact. We got to keep it tight if we're going to consolidate our gains here. If people suddenly start loosening up, you're going to see those numbers shoot right back up. Yes.
You can
take it down for this. You're
sure.
Within your rights.
We're talking about social distancing. What is happening in laundries, supermarkets? I see people like into the laundry, like full of people, and then without wearing a mask. And this is getting like people, it's not getting the message. What do you think about this? Because I know that laundries are essential places.
Yes.
So there isn't a limit for the people that can be outside, but should be like the government do something about.
Yes.
Getting implementation of more rules, because it's not, nothing is being done. That's what I think.
Well, I don't think nothing's being done. Right. You've seen some examples, and I'm concerned about that. I think in general, because our enforcement agencies, NYPD, FDNY, Sheriff's Office, Buildings Department, you name it, they've been out there constantly now for weeks. Hundreds of thousands of times they've gone to businesses, they've gone up to everyday New Yorkers to do enforcement. And what we're finding consistently is people do respond to the enforcement. If they're told break up, if they're told spread out, they do it, with very, very few exceptions. What we've got to keep tightening up is that if you see something, call 311, and that enforcement is supposed to come rapidly. Had this conversation with Commissioner Shea and the other commissioners. That has to be very fast. So, yes, people need the laundromats. They were kept open for a very specific reason. You know, we want people to have clean clothes. The cleaning of clothes actually kills the coronavirus. That's a good thing. But you can't crowd into a laundromat or a supermarket or a pharmacy or anything like that. So it means that the people who work there have to remind people. And if they're not getting cooperation, they need to call 311 immediately. I need you to say this, please, everyone. Anyone who sees crowding or people are not socially distancing, call 311 right away, and we will send enforcement agents immediately. And again, we're going to warn people, and if they don't follow the warning, they can be fined now, and those fines can be very substantial. But what we want to do is, if someone shows up to the laundromat, it's too crowded, hold back, you know, form a line. If you can't wait, come back another time. People should be really smart. Only go to the laundromat as little as you can. You know, don't go all the time. Go as infrequently as you can. The same with the grocery store. Go as few times as you can, stock up, and then stay home. But that ability to send enforcement over quickly is what will make all the difference here. Who has not gone? Okay, Jeff. Releasing data this week. The data in an atmosphere of crisis is less precise. This won't surprise you, Jeff. Gender is immediately available. Age is immediately available. The ethnicity data in a crisis atmosphere where healthcare is being provided rapidly to everyone that can be reached, that's been less of a focus to get the ethnicity data in that environment. So we have enough data to put out. I'm not sure it is as perfect as it could be, and I think it'll take time to make it better, but we're going to have something out this week for sure. And what it will show, and I've already spoken to this from the maps that the health department has put out, this is clearly tracking health disparities in general. I've said that before, I'm going to say it again. I cannot be more blunt. This disease is affecting people disproportionately in lower-income communities, in communities that have had more health problems historically, and in communities of color. The extent of that disparity, we're still trying to fully understand, and the data we'll give you will help us understand, but it will not be the final word, because again, it is preliminary and imperfect data in the middle of a crisis. But there's no question in my mind, we've already put that out publicly, we've already said, there is a disparity dynamic here. It is real, it is meaningful. Now, how do we keep addressing that? First of all, on the question of beds, there is no question we've been tracking beds to a fare-thee-well. Beds have been available, are available. Right now, I've had this conversation with Mitch Katz literally every day with a whole team of people at OEM. We projected the worst-case scenario. We prepared for the worst-case scenario. We are not experiencing the worst-case scenario right now. Thank God. There is no place in our public hospitals, and Jeff, you would agree, the public hospitals are explicitly the place where so many people who experience those health disparities go for their care. That's the number one venue. There are beds in all of our public hospitals. Some have had to transfer patients at times, at peak times, from one public hospital to another, but there's always a bed. So we know there's disparity. The whole effort to keep ahead of this with the ventilators, with the PPEs, has been for everyone. But clearly, if this is tracking healthcare disparities, it means that all this Herculean effort that all the healthcare workers are putting in, all the supplies from around the country, is explicitly to help everyone in need. And therefore, if it's in an atmosphere of disparity, thank God all of this effort is being expended for everyone, and that's not showing disparity. Where we're not seeing disparity is the full court press to help everyone in need everywhere. The amount of help that's gone to health and hospitals, has gone to Elmhurst in particular, has been overwhelming. The number of healthcare personnel that have moved over there, been sent over there, the supplies, there's no disparity in that. The military, when I made the request of the military to send medical personnel, it was explicitly for our public hospitals, for frontline work in the ICUs and emergency departments. We've gotten about 300 military medical personnel. I am expecting more, but that's going right to where the need is greatest. So all of that speaks to the situation, the testing issue. This is the has been the worst part of the equation from the beginning. If we had the testing, January, February is when it could have made a huge strategic difference. Once it finally started to arrive, we essentially found out that within days it was too late and we already had community spread. Testing now cannot allow us to change the basic trajectory. At some point, there may be a role strategically for testing again, but right now it does not allow us to fundamentally change the reality. It does allow us to ensure the maximum number of healthcare workers and first responders are available to save everyone else. It does allow us to focus on the more severe cases, which are still very numerous. It does not allow us to stop the vast majority of people out there who will get infected from getting infected. Testing doesn't do that. Because obviously you can get tested one day, it could be you're negative, and the next day you could be positive. Testing is not prophylactic, it's not preventative. If you had 100% universal testing, that would be a different matter. We're nowhere near that right now. So I understand why people are yearning for testing, and they see what feels like disparities in the provision of testing, but I want to say, and there are, clearly, but that's not the same thing as whether the testing would save lives the way we need lives saved. That train left the station a long time ago. But we're going to try and figure out if there's anything else that we can do. And I'll have more to say on that in the course of the week. I do think there's strategies that we might be able to innovate to try and figure out where we can get particularly more education efforts and more multilingual education efforts to communities that need them. See over here if there's anyone. Going back over here.
Have you talked to Commissioner Shea about how the department's doing today with the number of officers that are sick or the ones that still need testing? And do you know if there are any specific testing sites that have been opened around the city for cops, firemen, paramedics?
I don't know, and we can get back to you today on specific locations. I do know that both police and fire, from talking to both commissioners, report a substantial number of their members coming back from the disease. What we've talked about before, their frontline forces are overwhelmingly younger, healthier people. Officers on patrol, firefighters, EMTs, paramedics. Any of those who are getting sick, the vast majority are coming back rapidly after a week or two each. Some not. And we're very, very concerned about anybody who's suffering or anyone whose life is in danger. But the vast majority are coming back quickly. But the absentee level, the sickness level is still very high. Both Commissioner Shea and Commissioner Nigro are absolutely consistent in saying they have the forces they need. They have a deep bench. They're able to make moves to keep things moving, to keep providing the service that we need to provide. We'll get you the specifics on how testing is done. Clearly, when first responders need testing, that is a priority. Okay, way back. I'm sorry. A little louder. Can you take the mask down so I can hear you? There you go. I couldn't hear the beginning. So we've talked about this before. I'm looking at my lineup. Yes, you can join in, Dr. Barbeau. You know, Dr. Barbeau, behind your bandana. I wasn't sure from over there. The city is continuing, the health department, health and hospitals continue to look at this issue and try and determine how helpful it could be. What Dr. Katz said, I believe it was yesterday or Sunday, is that it is being administered to certain patients who are COVID positive because of the extremity of their sickness, to see if it would be helpful. But that is in reaction to particular dynamic that an individual is having with the disease, not a broader effort, because so far, as I understand, Dr. Barbeau will comment, there aren't the kinds of studies to clarify what you would gain from it versus the dangers and the negative side effects. As I understand it, there are side effects that could be very severe, particularly for older or more vulnerable people. And so trying to strike that balance has been a big question in the healthcare community. Dr. Barbeau, let me hold on. I'm going to go back. Get out of your way.
So I want to echo what the mayor said in terms of the use of hydroxychloroquine. I think the main point here is that health and hospitals, in collaboration with other hospital systems throughout the city, have been looking at any and all potential therapies to help save as many New Yorkers as possible. And hydroxychloroquine is one of those early medications. I think that there have been, to date, very few patients actually able to take the medication. So it's too early to say what the clinical benefit has been. Dr. Katz has been clear that the focus of using hydroxychloroquine has been to try and have individuals who are currently suffering respiratory distress from having to keep them go on ventilators, which I think is a really critical component. But again, it's still too early to know what the efficacy of hydroxychloroquine will be. And again, that's why it's really so critical for us as a city to adhere to social distancing, because what we're trying to do is not only slow the spread, but reduce the potential impact to individuals who may be adversely affected, especially those above the age of 50 with chronic underlying illnesses.